Would you please stand with me for the reading of the word? Now the whole earth had one language and one speech. And it came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. Then they said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and bake them thoroughly." They had brick for stone and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth." But the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, "Indeed, the people are one, and they all have one language. And this is what they begin to do. Now nothing they propose will be withheld from them. Come, let us go down there and confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech." So the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore, its name is called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. The word of God. Please be seated. Happy Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islander month. Yes. If you caught a glimpse at me this morning and thought, what happened? Why is he not wearing his normal garb? This is our traditional church garb that Tongans wear to church every Sabbath. So now you get to experience a little bit of what it's like to be a part of my culture. Repeat after me, malo lelei. Okay, one more time, malo lelei. Okay, turn to someone and say malo lelei. It just means hello, by the way. Sorry, yeah. It actually means I hate you, but don't tell anyone. It's a busy month of congratulations and celebration. Firstly, our graduates, who we got to really experience and celebrate up here because they're doing amazing things. It's also National Foster Care Awareness Month. That's something that's very interesting for us that we really care about here. There's Mental Health Awareness Month. This is that month. There's Skin Cancer Awareness Month. There's National Asparagus Month. Yes, we share this month. There are so many people groups that get to share the joy and celebration of this month. But above all these, the most common normally is the AANHPI, also formerly known as AAPI, or before that, APA, Asian Pacific American. But as of 2021, it is now known as Asian American, Native Hawaiian, because they are indigenous people, Pacific Islanders. Welcome to the celebration, and the sermon of this Sabbath will be about that. Now, the Asian American, the AANHPI is a very large and diverse people group in the United States. In fact, it's the fastest growing group of racial group in the U.S., if you didn't know that. The Filipinos got here in the 16th century. Filipinos, you all have been here a long time. Since the 16th century. We celebrate May and early May in the month of May, mainly because the Transcontinental Railroad was completed in 1869, May 10th, by immigrant Chinese workers who did a lot of work, underpaid or no pay, to make this country work. Also, in the 1800s, the first Japanese immigrant came over, May 7th. And so May is a very, very important date. Now, prior to the 1970s, the word that people used for Asian American was Oriental. We no longer say that because Oriental is a direction. Oriental means moving towards the east, Occidental towards the west, and since Europe was the center of the world back then, everything to their east was Oriental. That's why we still call the Middle East, because it's still east of Europe. They had to change that. Why? Because Asian American, Pacific Islanders, Native Hawaiians are not a direction, they are a people with a story. A diverse, large group of peoples with a story. So here, I want to play a little game today. I call this game, Who's Not AA and HPI? I'm going to put on the screen a set of human beings that are fairly popular, famous people. Your job is to guess which one on the screen is not part of Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islanders. All right, let's put the first one up here. I want to introduce you to these people in case you don't know who they are. That's Jackie Chan on the top left, a very famous actor with a very long history in movies. The lady next to him is Maya Lin. Maya Lin, she's a very well-known designer and architect. In fact, she was the one who did the architecture for the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. If you've ever been there, she's that person. The person under Jackie is Fred Armisen. He's a comedian. He's an actor, a musician, a writer. And then next to him is a little-known star by some of you may know by the name of Jason Momoa, who is known for his acting and his bod. Okay, friends, I want you to decide which one of these human beings is not a part of the AA and HPI. Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Islanders. Let me give you 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay. Have you guessed? Have you got it in your head? All right. I'm going to put the answer up here in 3, 2, 1. It is Jackie Chan. Did you know that? Yes. Jackie Chan is not an American. Exactly. Oh, that's what Asian American is. Yeah, it's in the name. That's right. That's correct. Yeah. Let's go to the next slide. Here's a few other people you might know. Okay. The top left, Kalpana Chawla. She's an astronaut, the first of her people to ever fly into space. Has many awards under her belt and died in the Columbia flight in 2003. Then just beneath her, someone you may have seen around, Kamala Harris, Vice President of the United States of America. Above her, diagonally, is the only gentleman on this slide, Simu Liu. He's an actor. You may have seen him in Marvel movies, some comedies, action-type figure. And then below him is someone named Nora Lum, also better known as Awkwafina, a rapper, an actress, a comedian. All right. Okay, which one of these individuals does not belong to the AA and HPI group? I'll give you 5 seconds to think about it. If you need to, deliberate with some of your friends. 4, 3, 2, 1. Do you have it in your head? You know who it is? Okay, here we go. Let's shorten 3, 2, 1. 3, 2, 1. It is. You knew that? Yes. The Canadians knew. Why? Because he's, that's your hometown, yeah. He's a Canadian, yeah. Not Asian American. Interestingly enough, hey, aren't we all on the same continent? Does that matter? Actually, it does. Cultural ethics studies is not in Canada. It's not a Canadian thing. So they don't identify in those kind of titles. All right, last slide. Top left, gentleman by the name of Neo, also known as Keanu Reeves, an actor for quite a few years. Just below him is a lady who is a senator, state senator, by the name of Tammy Duckworth, lost both of her legs as a pilot, a lieutenant pilot. Then next to her is Naomi Osaka, a famous athlete, tennis player. And then above them is a little well-known musician by the name of Bruno Mars. All right, which one of these individuals, which one does not belong to the AANHPI community? I'm gonna give you 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Do you know who it is? Do you know who it is? Okay, 3, 2, 1. They're all a part. All of them. Yeah. Right. Isn't that interesting? Who you might have thought should be a part of this group and who shouldn't be. Who just seems like the ideal candidate, the one that you're just positive about. Turns out that, nope, they're not that particular person. Why? Because this is an incredibly diverse group of peoples. It's a large, it's a representation of a large sect of the world, globe. And diversity is a beautiful thing. As we celebrate a diverse community, we're celebrating the AANHPI month, we are celebrating the beauty of diversity. The story that most Christians think of when we think of the origins of diversity comes from the book of Genesis. We often think of the story, the Tower of Babel. This is where we often hear it in Sabbath school, and we talk about it, and teachers teach us, and we have this idea that, yeah, this is where diversity began, where everyone started having different languages. And so, you know, pretty much how the story goes is all of humanity used to speak the same language, and it was inferred that because we all spoke the same language, we were all of the same ethnicity. We were just all one people. And because we were one people as human beings, we wanted to build a tower to go up to heaven to be where God is. And so we began to build, and we began to build a tower, and God got a little nervous. God was scared. God was angry. So God punishes us by making all of us speak different languages. And boom, now we're all diverse. This has been kind of like the story that floats around in our mind when we think about it. In our Christian world, the narrative has been this. Diversity came about because of some conciliatory type option that God had to push the button on because humanity wasn't doing what humanity should have done. So because the people weren't doing it right, God's first choice option was out the door, and he had to stop us from reaching heaven. And as a consequence of God doing that, we were punished. Our unity was broken. We no longer spoke the same language. And all of a sudden, we're fractured pieces of who we used to be. You can see why this kind of narrative has negative connotations towards diversity. And there's a subtle, subtle tone in there that would suggest being diverse is problematic. Especially when we layer that with the New Testament. As Christians, we often spend a lot of time in the New Testament, and New Testament really emphasizes unity, especially in Paul's writings. You could, we'll just throw up on the screen here for us to see just a few of the verses. But it's pretty clear that New Testament is really emphatic about the idea of unity. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, "Now I appeal to you that you be united in the same mind and the same purpose." That sounds a lot like those who were building the Tower of Babel, no? They were of the same mind. They were of the same purpose. And in Ephesians, as he's talking to those in Ephesus, making every effort to maintain unity. In John, in Jesus' prayer, "I do not ask for these only, but also for those who will believe in me through their word, that they all may be one, just as you, Father, are in me and I in you, that they also may be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. The glory that you have given me, I have given to them, that they may be one, even as we are one, in them and you in me, that they become perfectly one, so that the world may know that you sent me and loved them even as they loved me." See the strong emphasis on unity here, on being of one mind, being of one body, being of one people, moving in the same spirit. In 1 Peter's The author points out, finally, for all of you, have unity in mind, sympathy, brotherly love, a tender heart, and a humble mind. And then Romans, Paul breaks into it. May the God of endurance in his prayer and encouragement grant you to live in such harmony with one another, in accord with Jesus Christ, that together you may be one voice, glorify the God and the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. As modern-day readers of the Bible that spend most of our time in the New Testament, it becomes almost a sense of inferred truth that whenever God comes close, God is uniting. God is pulling together. So when we think about the Tower of Babel and God moving people out, or as the text would say, scattering, we immediately jump to the conclusion that this must be some kind of punishment. That God is moving people away is God's displeasure with the plans that are in place. And maybe it is not the plans that God had in store, but maybe it's not a punishment. We're used to the narrative of God who desires to draw us together in unity. Now, let's reflect on the Tower of Babel. Let's not be tempted to jump right away to conclusions we've always had. And let's see what else may be in this particular passage, this narrative. In verse 7, they say, come, let us go down and there and confuse their language. This is God talking, that they may not understand one another's speech. Let's keep that in mind. This is what God is coming down to do. He's going to come down, confuse the languages, and they begin to move apart. At the beginning of the story, the people are moving eastward. They find themselves moving from Shinar. They're in the plains. They like what's happening. So they said, let's build a city and a tower. Now, this word tower here, interestingly, it's Migdal, which can mean an erect kind of a military type tower that people would build so that they can keep an eye on their enemies. But here in this particular area of the world, here in the space where Babylon begins to grow, there are other kinds of towers that are built that are very common. And these things, I think, would probably make a lot more sense to our story today. They're called ziggurat. Everybody say ziggurat. Ziggurat. The ziggurat, this is an ancient one. This is the one that is still around today. They still do digs around this ziggurat. Ziggurats are, they're not temples, but they are built next to a temple, and they're not really, they don't afford human beings to be able to go inside. You can't go in there, it's not a temple. It's usually rubble, and they fill it up with rocks, and so there's no space inside the actual ziggurat. They're built next to the temple, and they're not a building for people to meet in. You'll notice that they have stairs. Let me show you a diagram of what the ziggurat should look like when they're finished with it more immediately. You see, there's a lot of stairs. There's stairs to the ziggurat. And when we think about this, because we have a particular idea of how the story should go, we think the stairs are for the people to go up to heaven. So they're going, we're building this tower up to heaven. We're going up that way. But in actuality, ziggurats are built next to temples, not for people to go up, but as a way to entice the gods to come down. That's what they're known for. So the temple was built, and then next to the temple, the people would build a ziggurat in hopes that the gods would be enticed. There's a more accessible way to get down to the temple. So then they would begin to move up and down these stairs. The thought process for the culture was that if we built this ziggurat, the gods would come down and they would go up. Sometimes they would build little rooms at the top in case the gods got tired, right? The gods came from a long way off in the universe. They're beat. They're going to hang out at the top for a little bit before they come down the stairs to be in the temple. And then when they're done with their temple work, they go up the stairs. And just before they take off to wherever the heavens might be, they take a little break. They hang out. They relax at the ziggurat. I'm going to name my next business the ziggurat, and you're all welcome to come hang out. This is what the gods were supposed to do after they build the ziggurat, the tower. And so if we consider that this is a ziggurat, then maybe the idea of the people here as they're talking, let us build ourselves a city and a tower who's up the top of heaven. Maybe what they were thinking was, hey, if we build this tower to the heavens, the gods would come down and legitimize our civilization. Their hope was trying to achieve divine legitimization for their civilization. Their hope was that because they were a people who were unified in language and creed and ethnicity, that if they built this, the gods would come down and say, you are a powerful empire. You are the one who will rule the land. The world will cease to continue without your leadership. You are it. You in your comfortable homogeneity is the shining beacon of light that the gods would be proud of. So they build a ziggurat. And guess what happens when they build a ziggurat, according to the text? What does God do? God comes down. God comes down. But the Lord, verse 5, came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. Oh, the ziggurat has worked. The Genesis, the author here, as he's writing and pinning, he's excited. They build a ziggurat so that the gods would come down and say, yes, you are a mighty city. You are supposed to be the way that you are. It's beautiful. Instead, the gods, Elohim, does come down, comes down the ziggurat and tears them apart. So the very thing they were hoping to get, the very achievement, affirmation, confirmation for their great homogeneity, for their great unity, for their great power, was dismantled when Elohim comes down the ziggurat. Why does God scatter them? Was it to punish them? Is this the origin of the diversity story? Well, according to Genesis's author, God scatters them because they lost track of their calling. God commanded them over and over and over what they were supposed to do. Here, you will see it on the screen, Genesis chapter 1, 28. God blessed them and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. Again, after the flood, when humanity went off, God begins anew. He's starting over with them, and he says, God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and what? Fill the earth. Again in Genesis, still in the same story, and you be fruitful and multiply, abound the earth and multiply in it. God's intentions for the people that were in Babel was not to stay with and for themselves, but to be a people who diversifies and grows out into the world. Walter Brueggemann points out that the scattering of peoples was not a curse, as some have interpreted. It was a blessing. God comes down and says, hey, you've lost your way. You have decided to become comfortable with yourselves, to keep yourself safe, to build a stronghold that you might defend off others, when in actuality, I want you to go into the world. I want you to create and diversify and have language and build stories, and your stories will diversify and we'll have different people groups and there'll be all kinds of expressions of life and love, and all will come from the one God who loves humanity. Diverse stories of people and people groups operating under the same love that is from the one God. Then our stories begin to inspire. Then our stories begin to change lives. Our stories become beautiful and wondrous when they look different, when they have different roots, but they share the same essence, something wonderful about each of our journey and our people's journey. The AANHPI movement that was fortified in the 70s found their inspiration and their strength from the Black Civil Rights Movement of the 1960s. Because this people group was able to be courageous enough to move forward, it empowered the Asian Pacific Islander Native Hawaiian group to pick up courage and do the same. They found the story of the Civil Black Rights Movement to empower them. The Civil Black Rights Movement, by the way, did more than that. I mean, like the many different stories and spurts that came forth from it. It even affected Adventists. Did you know that? Do you know that Adventists, we have the privilege and the honor of living the way we do today because of the Civil Rights Movement, the Black from 1964. Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 protects employees and job applicants from discrimination based on religion. They marched and we got Sabbath protection. The Adventist Church didn't march in 1964, nor did we make an official statement from the church, and yet we became benefactors from the story of another people. Do you see the power that happens in our diversification of who we are, that we've come to the table with? When I get to hear your story and watch your movement, it inspires me to live even more fully. And when I live more fully, it inspires others. And so when I celebrate Asian American, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Island month, I celebrate the diversity of all of our stories and the inspiration it brings to each of our lives. All of us are sojourners in this world, and it takes all of us to inspire and care for all of us. 2017, I was at a conference that I was one of the speakers for, one of the presenters for. The room was electric, it was beautiful, it was powerful, it was moving. The people there were just, we were in a rhythm together, and I came off the pulpit, I sat down at my table to have a conversation, and while we were having a conversation, a friend sneaks to the table and says, hey, there's a little old lady that wants to meet you. And I said, oh yeah? He said, yeah, like she really needs to meet you. And then I was like, oh man, I must have really offended her. Like, dang, was it my outfit? Was it like, did I say something offensive? Was my joke wrong? Because, you know, it's per use, right? And so I was like, oh no, now this little old lady's gonna come and she's gonna get me. And I was trying to think of like excuses, like, hey bro, could you just, and before I could finish telling him to, you know, help me out, the little old lady pulled up to the table. She says, hey, Were you the man that just got done speaking a little while ago? And I was like, there was a lot of people. There was a lot of them. There's a lot of different kinds of, it could have been anyone. She says, no, I think it's you. Can I talk to you? Oh, you all know that. Can I talk to you? It's gonna be drama. This is when they do this thing, right? I said, yeah, sure. So I pull up and just as I stand with her to start talking with her, they go into a music session and now people are standing and waving their hands. I'm like, oh Lord, this is really gonna be interesting. She says, I was listening to you speak and I heard that you said you're Tongan. Are you Tongan? And I said, it depends. She didn't get the joke. She just looked at me. What is it? Are you Tongan? Yes or no? She said. And I said, I'm Tongan. She says, oh, wow. And this little white lady looked at me and she said, I'm Tongan too. I'm gonna show you a picture of this little white lady. I think it's pretty obvious she's not Tongan. And I was like, did she take her medicine? She says, I'm Tongan too. I said, I thought she was just trying to be like, you know, like, hey, I'm affirming you. It's okay, we're all Tongans in this room, right? And I was like, and she's like, why are you laughing? And I said, have you seen yourself? Then she starts speaking in Tongan to me. And I was like, dang, even slow down. I don't even speak that good. What? I said, you are Tongan. She says, I am Tongan. I said, wow, all the chances. And she says, you know, I was just listening to you, and I wanted to catch you afterwards and say how profoundly proud I am that we, our peoples, are here represented today. She didn't know her skin color. She was Tongan like me. She said, us, we get representation today. She says, well, I've been waiting for a moment where I can see someone from my country. And I was like, well, this someone doesn't look like you. But thank you. She says, just someone from my country who we have been in the missionary work. And I found out she was born in Tonga in the early 1900s. Her dad had been a missionary and he was down there and they had her. And so she's just always identified as this little Tongan lady. I gave her a hug. She says, our story has come a long way. You and me. Our peoples have been through a lot. And I can't be more proud to say that today our voice gets heard. She says, hey, listen, I've been around the white people. I didn't want to be like, you are white. She said, listen, I've been around them. She says, don't get discouraged. What? Why would I get discouraged? She's speaking to me now, right? Like, because I'm not feeling this way, but she's felt a certain way. She's like, I've been among them. Don't be discouraged. She says, you know what? They do things a certain way. And if you don't do it their way, they're going to subtly judge you. She says, but don't you give in. You be you. Our peoples, we eat a lot. Our peoples, we go places together.
If you ever see Tongans or Polynesians, you see we come in like there's 1,000. We're not gangs. That's just our brothers and our sisters. We roll together.
We go together places. She's like, we learn from story. We tell stories. Don't stop. That's who we are. That's our blood. And she says, the world, they'll get it someday. But if you give up your voice, they'll never get it. Don't change.
This little lady gave me a hug.
She says, take a picture, okay?
Then she said, do you have your Tongan hymnal? Tahimi is what we call it.
I had one with me. Is it there? It's a black, skinny little book. She said that, do you have your himi? I said, no, not on me. I don't carry it around. I'm not super Tongan.
Because every good Tongan's got a hymnal book on him. That's how Adventists we roll. We get one. Listen, you run up to a Tongan family that's Adventist, you say, do you have a hymn book? She will pull it out on you. I said, no, I don't have mine. I brought it today. I said, it's always at home. Every weekend we go through it. She says, okay. She says, keep singing that song. That's our song. Keep telling our story. That's our story. Let the world hear it. Because they don't get to change unless you tell it. Don't tell it like anyone else. Don't tell it like another person. Tell it like you tell it, because that's the way we talk. That's the way we live. She says, keep it with you. I said, okay. I said, what's your name? Little Tongan white lady.
What's your name? She goes, oh, my name? Oh, that's not important. Don't worry. We're together. That's all that matters. And I said, no. What's your name? And she goes, oh, I'm going to look it up because I don't want to say the wrong name. Her name is Desmyrna. That was her name, Desmyrna. I said, nice to meet you, Desmyrna.
She says, you won't know my maiden name. I said, no. She's like, no, nobody knows my maiden name. My husband's not very popular. I said, what's your maiden name? And she says, oh, my maiden name is Tolhurst. Desmyrna Tolhurst. And if you open up the hymnal that's so sacred to us Tongans, you'll see it the first line. The man who headed the work of putting this together was her father, Herbert Tolhurst. We'd been singing the songs that this little white lady's family had helped put together that had brought us through some tough times, that has brought us through brokenness, that has brought us through failure, that has brought us through death, not just my family, but Tongan families around the world. We carry this book, and this little lady's family was the reason why many of us kept pushing forward. We sang songs from here at weddings and at funerals. We sing songs from here when life is good. We sing songs from here when we're broke, because we're always broke. That's just the way we roll. Why? We didn't have credit check in the islands. America made that up. We came over, was like, oh, hey, oh, wait, what? What happened? We sang the songs of the saints. And somewhere down the way, her and I found ourselves at a random conference, standing together, feeling empowered by the story we shared. And so today, let's not just be a happy, homogenous group of Adventists. Let's scatter and be diverse. Let's be proud of our stories and lean in. Because when we do, we are following God's command to be fruitful and multiply and fill this earth. We're going to take time now to do communion together. And this is one of my favorite times of the year, is communion. Because we get to sit with each other from the different places we come from. We get to sit together and share that the flesh, the blood of Jesus belongs to all of us. It belongs to me and it belongs to you. And together, this is what unites our diversity.